Yo, what is up? Welcome to another episode of the Music Maker Podcast. I'm your host, Flash89, and I'm joined today with a very special guest. Mitch Needs No Sleep. Now, he's just literally dropped an EP on Lee Foss's Repopulate Mars, a three-track EP, which is an absolute stomper, and a new track recently called Kryptonite on Uprise Music. And you're going to have to tell me, man, is the vocalist, how do you pronounce the name?
So it's Kane.
Kane, yeah, I thought so. I just didn't want to screw it up.
Yeah, so his actual name is Kane. And then, as you know, you do in sort of the EDM sort of space, you change a vowel for like an X or a V or like something like that. So he just has the title as that, but it's Kane.
Yeah, wicked, man. But, dude, sick records, man. You've got a real sound, like I've noticed you've gone for. And obviously, we've been chatting back and forth for a little while now. Just talking music and stuff. So I'm really stoked to actually have you on the podcast. This is awesome.
Thank you very much for the introduction, mate. It's a pleasure to be here. As you said, we go back and forth on messages, sending each other music and just talking about the industry. So it's good to record it and have it out there for everyone to hopefully either learn a little bit or get inspired and just have a good conversation, mate.
That's why we do it, man. And it's actually really cool just to chat with you anyway, because I don't know if you remember, but we've probably only met in person once. Do you remember like when we met years ago? And it's no dramas if you don't.
I don't. Where was it?
Yeah, dude, it was ages ago, and it was brief. I think I was in Melbourne, and I was playing with Mike Wells with Senor Raw, and I think we're at someone's house or something. And you were there as well. And yeah, dude. I was literally, as I was preparing for our combo, I was like thinking back, and I was like, no joke, man, that was ages ago. He probably won't even remember.
No, I don't. Bro, this is awkward because I don't want to say yes, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, 100%. I'm just like stalking you and shit, but
yeah, no, it's cool, man. And like, I have a lot of respect for your music as well. You know, I've been playing your stuff since like the 2018, 2019 times. And yeah, I really enjoy your style as well, man. It's always good to chat with other hardworking producers who have the same sort of mindset and share the same values.
100%, man. And on that note, that's one thing I've noticed with your presence is like you work, like from my perception, you're a real hard worker, like, and that comes across in your production output, but also like on the other side of things, like you're also like doing jiu-jitsu, you go to the gym, what looks to be every friggin' day. And I wanted to ask you, like, before we get into the music side of things, can you kind of elaborate more on like why you're so passionate and driven in terms of like the MMA and mixed martial arts side of things?
Of course. The best way to frame it is that I haven't always been this way. When I was a younger kid, I was a bit of a wild boy. I was a party animal. Probably why I don't remember meeting you, because I'm guessing this was like maybe 5 years or so
probably
ago.
Loose.
And you get to a point in your life where you're not happy with the way that things are going, and so you need to make changes. Mm-hmm. So the choice I had was continue down the path of partying. Yeah, I'm like a bit of a name in the scene, the local scene, but I'm not making as much music as I know I can or should be doing. Or you can make some serious changes to redirect and correct that course and hope for the outcome that you want. So probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I started martial arts, and they are the single thing that I credit for my productivity and my success now. Even growing up through school, you know, I was the kid that didn't really want to do his homework straight away. I'd leave it to the last moment. And martial arts is what has helped allowed me to develop work ethic and discipline and have a newfound focus for my life. So when you say that I have all this motivation and I'm very productive, I agree with you. I definitely am, but I haven't always been this way. And so that's one of the cool things that I like to tell people is that I wasn't born like this. You know, there's nothing that special about me, is that I just made a decision to recorrect my course in life, and martial arts has helped me do that. So I preach the benefits of it to anyone that wants to listen, but it's definitely a work ethic and discipline factor that has allowed me to sort of get to where I am in these last couple of years.
100%, man. And I resonate with that a lot, because I'd consider myself pretty driven as well. And so I always kind of like, I don't know, people that do the same catch my eye, and it resonates with me a lot, as I said. So, and I'm wondering, how does that then transition into your musical side of things?
It's just a natural progression. When you are physically doing things that are tough to do, and you have that discipline to show up and do them and get through each class, even though it is physically tough to do, it's just going to naturally translate into every other area of your life. And you'll just start to see it happen. If you just show up and do the classes and get through them, you will naturally see that translate into other areas of your life. You don't need to like consciously think about it. It will just start to happen because it will fundamentally change you as a person.
Cool, man. That's awesome. Awesome.
And so looking back on my life, I'm sure there's lots of people listening that can relate to it. Is like when you are young, it's fun to go out, it's fun to drink with your mates and everything, but there really does hit a point in your life where you want to decide, is this the path that I want to keep going down, or do I feel that I can achieve bigger and greater things in my life? And myself personally, I've always been a creative person. I grew up playing with Legos. I'd always loved building cities and everything. So I've always been a creative person. I always knew I had that talent inside of me and that natural proclivity to be creative, but I just had to develop the work ethic and the discipline to fully show off my skills. Because, as the saying goes, hard work beats talent that doesn't work hard, or I've butchered that, but something to that effect. Is that yes, you can be a talented person, and I'm sure both of us know people who are naturally talented, creative, but they don't work hard, and so they don't get to that point where they can.
100%, dude. Like, I mean, I've known producers over the years. I've been in production. Like, I've been in the scene for like making music for at least 10 years now, and it's funny because I've always like come across people that, man, I'm like, far out, they're so good, like they're so talented, but you know, they don't do anything with it. And so I always find that interesting perception.
So this was about 5 years ago. I started the martial arts, and it's just, I haven't looked back ever since, man. I've just been focused on the music, cut out any other distractions. Like, I really pulled back from the scene. I used to be the type of guy that would love to be out 2 or 3 nights a week, just being social, being in the scene, being amongst it. And I literally pulled back to nothing. I would go out to play my gigs, but apart from that, you wouldn't see me out in a nightclub, because everything has an opportunity cost. Time that you spend out in the club on drinks, doing whatever, is time that you're not spending in the studio, and it's going to be time that you're spending hungover and not being productive. So everything has an opportunity cost, and you just got to weigh up what it is that you truly want and then make the correct decision for it.
100%, dude. And can I ask, do you still drink?
But if I'm out, I'll have like a vodka lime soda or two. It's not an issue, but I'm not out for the sake of being out. I truly just kind of go out to play my gigs, because that's still what gives me the most joy in life. There is no greater feeling than playing an amazing gig to people and playing your own tracks and getting a great reaction. So that's what I get the most enjoyment from, is playing good gigs. And apart from that, I don't really feel the need to go out. So I guess the only benefit of doing it when you're younger is you kind of get it out of your system a little bit, that you don't feel the need to do it later on. I don't feel the need to be out drinking on the weekend, because my goals now are that I want to achieve big things with my music, and that's what I'm focused on. So that's what I get the enjoyment out of.
Yeah, that's wicked, brother. Like, I guess you kind of have to go through that to know, like, you don't have so much of the FOMO looking at people like, nah, I've done it. So, but, and then obviously you have new goals. That's really cool.
It's always easy in hindsight to be like, oh, I wish I started martial arts earlier, and I wish I did all of this, but like, maybe that's just not the way it would have worked out. So I guess the thing you can just say to people listening is that, you know, you can turn it around a little bit later if you are, you know, going down the wrong sort of path, drinking or anything early. It's not the end of the world. Just you kind of got to make some changes later on.
100%. And can I ask, how long have you been writing records for? Like, when went from, you know, from day one to... How long have you been in
a hill for? I'm 27 now. I'm 28 in a couple of weeks, in August. And I've been doing this since 2010. So I used to do house parties, like DJing house parties in school and everything.
Yep.
And I always loved the electronic music tracks, like Benny Benassi's Satisfaction.
Oh, what a tune.
And then Cream was another one. And I just always like would love the synthesized sounds that I would hear in these tracks, and I'd want to hear more from it. So this was back in 2010. EDM's just starting to pop off. And then I got into DJing house parties, which was fun. Had my own pair of decks that I do the house parties with. And then the natural progression, I guess, is you just want to start writing your own music, because you kind of get sick of playing other people's tracks. You're like, all right, I want to do my own. I want to make my own music. So then I got into music production maybe in 2012 and just started my journey since then. So I was doing EDM back then because that was the thing that was popping. Did that for a few years, got to play around the country, played overseas, which was fun, under a different alias.
And can I ask what the alias is?
There's Apocalypto. Apocalypto was the alias.
Killer. And what was the style? Was that what style was that?
Just like big room EDM sort of stuff. I loved the Hardwell, Show Tech, like that sort of vibe back then.
Yeah,
that was what was really cool. And like those glory days of EDM were a fun time.
Yeah.
So I had some decent accomplishments as I said, playing around the country, playing overseas, released some cool records and that. And then it was one trip to Ibiza in 2016 that kind of changed everything for me. I'd never even heard of Tech House before 2016. I just knew EDM. That's all I knew. And then I went over to Ibiza and I got to experience Tech House and how it worked in the clubs over there. Mm. And it changed everything. I'm like, this is what I want to make and play now. This is like what I want to do with my music.
Yeah.
Because in Melbourne, there was never really a scene for it. They always had the Melbourne sound, which was pretty popular for most of the years that I was active doing EDM stuff. So even when I was playing EDM, it kind of worked at the more commercial venues, but most places still wanted the Melbourne bounce sort of sound. So I wasn't exposed to the tech house aspect until I went overseas and got to experience it. And then when I came back, I'm like, all right, I want to start this. And that's when I stopped Apocalypto, started Needs No Sleep. And I've been doing that since I think 2017 was maybe the first release. So it's kind of been like 5 years now.
Yep.
And 2019 was the year that I started my one track a month sort of policy.
Oh, you're doing a one track a month policy.
Well, like my own promise to myself, I want to try and release one track a month. And I've been pretty much bang on with that since 2019.
That's wicked, man. It's impressive because it's not easy to do that, like to have that consistency, you know, that can be a real challenge.
Well, not only is it tough to write enough music to release one a month, then try to get labels to sign it and schedule it so that you can do a one a month. It can be a bit of a headache, but that's just the promise I made to myself. I'm like, I want to release that frequently and consistently because before, you know, I hit my disciplined work ethic sort of stuff, I was maybe putting out like two or three tracks a year and it's just not enough. There's too much time in between. And so one track a month, I think is enough that you stay in people's attention span, you stay in their ears, and it's a good way to keep momentum with your Spotify monthly listeners as well. Like I'm sure you will agree that people have short attention spans nowadays. So if you're going 3 or 4 month stretches without releasing any music, all right, so what content are you going to be posting? You're going to be like stretching to try and grab stuff that's probably not even relevant to music just so you can post something.
Yeah.
But at least with the ones at one a month, I've got content to post. I've got my how I made the track. I've got the assets from the label. And it just keeps the momentum with the Spotify monthly listeners.
That's killer, man. Yeah. Like when you say, I'm just thinking of that kind of output and some like, and then it makes me think of people that are struggling to finish records in general. Like, and I'm just thinking of like learners, maybe people that are listening in that are getting into dance music and like, mate, I can't even finish one. Like how can you, you know, what would be your recommendation to anyone that's kind of getting into writing records if they're getting stuck to finish?
Well, I say in my masterclasses, and this is a bit of a shameless plug, on my website, needsnosleep.com, I have a fair few masterclass videos where I literally open up some of my most well-known tracks and I explain from start to finish how I came up with it, what my thought process was that allowed me to create it. And then I also showed the finer, more technical aspects of like mixing down the track, producing some of the synths. So it's got literally everything, if you were curious how I make my tracks, is on needsnosleep.com. And one of the things I say in the classes is like the best tracks that I've ever made in my career, I knew within like the first hour that this is going to be a banger.
Yeah, cool.
If you're not vibing it after that first hour and you're trying really hard to push it uphill, it might be a bit of a battle. Like the best tracks I've ever made all came together reasonably easily within that first hour. And that's something I can say because I'm an experienced producer. So to go back to your question of what I would say to the beginners is just spend time in the studio just writing music, really just creating loops. It's a tough one whether I would say to finish tracks or just keep making lots of different grooves. The thing I find people, especially beginners, have a problem with is the arrangements. And now to me, arrangements are easy because one, I've played so many different tracks in the clubs. I know how the arrangements work. And now having written so many tracks, the arrangement part is easy. But I do actually see a lot of people asking me questions of like, oh, how would I arrange this track? So maybe the best thing to do is take a track that you like, put it in your door and just analyze how they've done it. Like, okay, do they have 45 seconds worth of intro? Does it then go into a drop straight away? Does it go into a breakdown? And just analyze it and see how it works. Because when you're playing in the clubs frequently, you can see how tracks work. Like, you know, with the reaction, you're like, oh yeah, this track, the arrangement, the flow of it is perfect. But if you're not playing in the clubs frequently, I think just taking tracks that you admire and you like and putting it into your door will be a good way to analyze arrangements.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, good advice, man.
So I think just, it's like anything, you just got to be in there doing it. And a lot of people get scared straight away of like, oh, they're scared to fail, so they kind of don't commit to doing it. Like, don't be scared. Just get in there and just start writing music until you get the experience and you get a bit better at it. And just take in as much knowledge as you can. Like, yeah, you can work it out yourself. The first few years of my career, I was working it all out myself. But you can probably expedite that process if you watch videos online, if you buy a couple of courses from guys that you like. You can probably speed up that process by a year or two and then get to somewhere that you're happy with sooner.
100%, man. I mean, these days, like, yeah, when I started, there was like just like forums and stuff, but now there's like so many good tutorials by people like yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm starting to put them out as well. Like, it's a lot. I think it's really cool for like learners that there's so much available. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree with that as well, and I have no problem saying that I buy other DJs courses as well. Like, there's guys that I like. I love Martin Eichen's tracks, and I've bought a couple of his courses because I'm just curious. I'm like, okay, yeah, how does he do it? And then I might pick up something different and go, oh yeah, I'll try that one out, you know. So it doesn't hurt. There's no problem, there's no issue buying them and seeing if there's anything that you can apply to your own.
100%, man. I've definitely realized that you can never be too good, and like, not even from an ego point of view, just like, you can become comfortable with just the way you produce. And then like, I find watching tutorials, sometimes you're like, oh, it's even good to know that like a lot of the stuff you do is already what they do. Like, even if you just didn't pick anything new up, but you're just like, oh, cool. I mean, they're doing that too. Their records sound awesome.
Definitely.
So I must be on the right track.
You're exactly right there. Watching someone and seeing that they do it the same way you do it, you're like, okay, so that is all right to do it that way.
Yeah, they're not doing some frigging magical way that you're like, how the hell are they so good, you know?
Yeah, and I saw you post something recently about when you stop trying to learn is when you get stagnant or whatever, and I definitely agree with that. You've always got to kind of be looking for new techniques or new learning new synths or just in general trying to learn something new to evolve your sound, because otherwise you will get stagnant with it. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, man, it's like as I think I said, well, that one, it's like the white belt mentality, which obviously, you know, I've done jiu-jitsu, you're a blue belt. Like, it's obviously really good to know, like, easy to know that if you just go into everything kind of open-minded, you know, chances are you pick something up and eventually you won't get tapped out. But
just always keep learning, and just you got to be in the studio, man. You've got to be in there just trying to write tracks.
Yeah, 100%, man. Can I ask, so what's inspiring you at the moment? Anything of any style in particular? Like, you've got a real sound that you're punching through, and if I could, we're listening to it from my point of view, it's kind of real chugging tech house, like real pumping. Mm-hmm. Because you have a sound, are you intentional with that? Like, have you developed that over time, or are you just like, yo, this is the sound I'm going for, this is what I'm doing now? Like,
I've always liked the rolling bassline sort of stuff, as you said, that like heavy chugging.
Yeah,
that was the thing, that was the sort of stuff I heard first in Ibiza, and I got to see that go off, and that's what I do like to make and also play. And I think it's important that you kind of make the stuff that you want to be able to play, really. I mean, what's the point in making a track if you have no intention to play it out at a gig? You might do it once or twice, but you're most likely more inclined to produce tracks that you can then play in your DJ sets. So all the stuff that I make, I play out in my sets, and I test it in my DJ sets because I want to see the reaction. But yeah, I definitely say my style is it's heavy. It's like heavy tech house. It's rolling tech house. That's why guys like me and Fab Massimo get along so well together as well. He's got a similar like rolling sort of vibe. But I've always just liked the heavier side of anything. Even when it was like EDM, I'd like the heavy EDM sort of stuff. And now that it's tech house, I like the heavier main stage sort of style.
You like your bangers, right?
Yeah, I like bangers.
Yeah, no, 100%, man.
Yeah.
So from a technical side of things in the studio, what door are you on again?
So I'm on FL Studio. The greatest door.
The greatest door. It's always a joke that, you know.
Yeah.
And FL, for anyone that knows, is Fruity Loops, right?
Fruity Loops, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm logic. I'm not going to, well, let's not get into that battle, but
yeah, look, the thing, so people ask me this question as well, is what door to use. They're all the same pretty much, because most of the time you're going to be using third party plugins anyway, that you can use in any of the doors. So it's more about finding a workstation that you have a good workflow in. And I actually learned originally in Ableton, but I just didn't find my workflow was quick and quick and efficient as it is in FL Studio. Like, I'm very, very quick in FL and I can put together ideas really easily, and I'm quite adept at that. So I think it's just whatever program you can work around it the quickest.
100%, man. Great call. I think, like, the way whenever someone that doesn't know anything about production, sort of, I always say it's like Xbox or PlayStation. Like, they literally do the same thing, but it's just your preference, as you said.
Yeah. And you're going to be using third-party plugins that you can use in pretty much all the doors, so it's not a huge issue.
100%. And I've noticed, like, just from your Instagram and stuff, are you using a bit of hardware? What synth are you rolling? Because you got some pretty unique synth lines as well, which sound really cool in your productions.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. So I have the Moog Sub 37, which is a phenomenal synthesizer. Really, really solid piece.
It even sounds cool.
It does. It sounds great right off the bat. Yeah. So I've had that since 2020, I think.
Yeah.
And it was really last year that I learned how to use it properly. And now I use it in, like, all my productions. So I had it for like a year and I didn't really use it that much. And then I think it was last year or the year before, I bought a course that explained everything about it. So I learned literally all the ins and outs of it. And then afterwards I was able to create some really, really unique and creative patches with it. So I use that in a lot of my tracks. So, like, something like Dangerous, the lead synth off the drops, that's from that. In Notorious, the hits are from that. Also, that build up, like wob 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 wob, that's from the Moog as well. So I could point to pretty much most of my tracks within the last 2 years will have something from the Moog in it. And the great thing about the Moog as well is, so with a lot of hardware synthesizers, you can't save patches. You kind of either have to take a photo of your settings or just don't change them until you're finished using it. The great thing with the Moog is it's still an analog synth, so it's got that warm and rich sound from it, but it also has a whole lot of preset and bank patches that you can save things to.
That's wild.
So that's how I'm able to come up with these, like, signature sounds. I'll spend a session making the sound and then I'll save it, maybe save a variation of it, and then I've got them there that I can recall them to later.
So when you're plugging it into your door, is it coming in as audio then?
Correct. Comes in as audio. Cool. So
yeah, because analog. Yeah.
So from FL Studio, I'll send out a MIDI pattern that I've recorded in into the Moog, and then it sends it out as audio.
Yeah.
And so just on top of that, as tracks I was mentioning, Timmy Turner, all of those main lead sounds from the Moog, Solar Eclipse from the Repopulate Mars EP, those lead sounds are from the Moog as well. So I've really got to credit a lot of the creative sounds I've come up with from this Moog. Like, it's a phenomenal piece of kit. I'm really, really happy with it.
100%, man. Like, yeah. And so what drove you to actually, because you said it sat on your shelf for a bit, like for a year, you said, like, what actually drove you, like, oh, I'm actually going to get into this?
Well, I'm sure, as maybe you can relate or a lot of other producers can relate, is there's a natural evolution again. So when you first start producing, you're using loops, you're using preset patches, you're using MIDIs, whatever. And then as you get better and better and better, you want to make pretty much every aspect of your production yourself. So you stop using as many drum loops, you stop using presets, you want to take on that authenticity and originality of every aspect of the track. So that was just the next progression. I wanted to really make my own unique sounds and stand out as an artist, which obviously if you're using like presets and that, you're not going to. So by creating my own personalized sounds on the Moog, I thought that was a way to stand out, and I'm pretty happy with the result.
Yeah, dude, that's a really good point, actually, because, you know, with production these days, what's your take on, you know, there's websites like Splice, obviously, so many people rinse that, and it's really handy, but what's your take on using that? Do you use it? Do you have any, what's your rule?
So as I just said, like, I think when you're beginning, there's nothing wrong with it, and you know, that's why these packs are there, so that you can just start putting together things. But as you progress as a producer, if you want to stand out and be a unique artist, you're not going to get there by using presets, sample vocals, or sample loops. Like, if
you
want
to use it, you don't use it.
I use like sample packs, as in I'll use a clap or a hat, but I make all my own drum loops. I make all my own bass lines, lead synths. I make everything myself. So, I mean, yep. I don't literally create the drum sample, but I program the drum loops and the top loops and everything myself. So, I mean, I might use Splice to get a white noise uplifter that I want. You know, yeah, I could make that myself on the Moog, but sometimes it's more efficient just to grab a white noise uplifter from Splice.
Yep.
But it just depends where you are in your career. If you're starting out, then it's okay, I guess, to use, you know, loops and samples. But as you're progressing, if you want to stand out, you really need to be as unique and authentic as you can, or and as original as you can be, because this market is so oversaturated that I think truly original pieces of music will still find their way to the top. So if that's what you want to be, then that's what it's going to require to get there.
Definitely. You know, like for me, like I use Splice in a similar way, and I try to be as reserved or authentic with it as I can. Cause like, you know, especially with vocals, like people, sometimes you'll hear a record that comes out and you're like, oh man, like I really liked this record, but I know that vocal's on Splice. I've heard it before. I don't know. For me, just, I don't know. It's still like a great production, but it almost taints it a little bit in my
I said literally the exact same thing in one of my masterclass videos.
I said,
I will hear a track, and even if it's a really, really cool and well-produced track, if I'll then hear that vocal sample on Splice, it just ruins the track for me. It just ruins it. Even though it's a really good track objectively, it just takes the shine off it. For whatever reason, I can't explain why it does it to us, but
yeah.
So what Splice can be good for, and again, I explain these in some of my videos, is I'm the type of person that I write best when I have something to start with. So I might start with a vocal sample and build a track around it, and then I'll swap that vocal out with an original vocal down the track. So that can be handy tip or trick for producers, is you can build a track around a vocal and just use it as a placeholder vocal and then look to swap it out down the track with something that's completely original, so you never have to worry about running into that issue.
That's a wicked point, man. I do the same. Like, with Splice in particular, is like if you're trying to write like a single type record where you got a vocalist and stuff, it can be really hard if you're just starting out of thin air. Like, you know, you just like writing a beat, like, all right, cool, now I need to present my beat to a vocalist. Whereas I find, as you said, like if you're writing, you know, if you're basically remixing a vocal to your original song, and then just go, and I find when you're presenting it to a vocalist too, you can be like, this is the vibe I was going for. You know, it might be the Splice vocal might be like an R&B female vocal, and you're like, cool, I can actually hit up R&B vocalist and go, this is what I want, can we work, and you go from there. Like, that's, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think the exact same way, mate, is I think of the outcome of what I'm doing. So if I've got a vocal to start with, then I'm like, all right, I'm building with this sort of style in mind, and it makes it a lot easier. So just to rattle off some names for places that people can go look for vocals, I think there's one called Vocalfy if they wanted to suss that. There's Vocalizer, I think. Tracklib have samples that you can clear. So they've got like a whole catalog of old, like 70s, 80s, 90s samples. So not only is it vocals, there's also instrumentation in there as well. So like guitars, trumpets, all that sort of stuff. So that's another website you can go browse for creativity. And I think just absorbing as much creative input as you can and hoping that it triggers something inside of you is a good way to try and produce music as well. Like sometimes I'll start a session just by listening to music, whether it's samples or listening to old music, whatever, just try and trigger that creativity a little bit is sometimes a good way to kickstart things. So a couple of websites like that might be worth visiting for the people here.
For those, so I've used Tracklib before. That's a good one. As you said, it was all old school. What were the other ones for? Are they like the other ones? Are they for finding vocalists, you mean?
So don't quote me, but I think Vocalfy have vocals on there, but they limit how many times someone can buy them. So it might be like a vocals for sale, but it only has 5 copies that are allowed to be sold, and then they discontinue that vocal. So it's not as frequent as Splice.
Yeah.
And then I think one of the other ones, like Vocalizer, I think you can either browse artists on there, so it's a good way to network and meet other like rappers or singers. And then they also have vocals on there, and I think those might be one-time vocals on there.
Yeah, definitely. But
it's just about doing a bit of your own research and expanding places to look for vocals. Because people ask me all the time, they're like, oh, where do you get such good vocals from? Like, I've obviously had to put in the effort to find these people. So just take the same approach. And if you're an upcoming producer, you're not, obviously not going to get a shot with some of the biggest top line writers and vocalists in the game unless you've got the cash for it, but you can probably connect with someone on the way up and build something cool together. It's just going to take a bit of effort to discover them, but if they're relatively unknown but you've got a good ear for talent and you think that you can work together and create something, then you should be reaching out to these sort of artists, whether it's on Instagram or if you hear them doing covers on YouTube and you think they've got a great tone of voice. Like, just start reaching out to people and trying to build the relationships.
Yeah, great point, man. Yeah, because your vocals are wicked, dude. Like, that's probably one of your things that I've noticed as well, is like because vocal production is quite challenging. Like, you know, I started just writing remixes and stuff like that, and I could always remix, but I was like, all right, cool, I want to write a single. I want to have a vocalist to top line. How did you get into that side of things? Is it the same way, you just practice, you reached out and you just got better, or did you have any advice from anyone? that gave you advice, I mean?
So I've done a couple of my vocals my own time. I know you do your vocals as well, and yours are really good. Yours are super solid. Body Talk was yours?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a killer one.
Thanks, man.
So I've done them before, and I don't mind doing them, but vocals recording and top line writing is just such a whole nother ballpark.
Mm.
And you've already got enough to focus on with writing actual music that I'm happy to engage the services of someone that spends their whole day coming up with catchy and unique stuff like that.
100%.
So, you know, I think you were hinting to my work with Kane,
yep,
who I work a lot with, and he was the same. He was relatively not unknown. He had a profile, but I listened to his voice and I went, this dude's amazing. I think we can really create something special together. And so I reached out to him and we've done about like 10 tracks together now. And that was just me listening to a whole bunch of different rappers and hearing him, and you know, I've got a good ear for talent, and I go, oh, he's something special. I think we can do something awesome together. So I reached out to him, sent him some tracks. He recorded some vocals for me. We signed them. We had that killer EP on This Ain't Bristol with Notorious, and Notorious is like a staple in my sets. I play it every DJ set and it goes off. And then we've had a whole lot of other ones together. And then it climaxed with our 3-track EP on Repopulate Mars, which is, you know, the single biggest achievement of my musical career, is releasing on a label like that. Like, they are the number one selling label on Beatport. You know, Lee Foss is very well known in the scene. And this all just came from me reaching out to Kane, you know, just doing a bit of research myself to try and find vocalists. I wasn't going to try reach out to the top tier guys because I wasn't there yet, but finding someone that was relatively on my level that I saw potential in and thought I could work with to achieve some great things together.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. And first of all, congratulations on the Repopulate Mars EP, because it's a wicked achievement, dude, especially when you've been, you know, pushing hard
and
stuff. Just quickly on a technical note, when you were talking about that, was so you reached out to Kane. Was Kane experienced in recording, or was he like, look, he's just a good rapper and he's never recorded before?
No, so he had released a lot of stuff previously. He'd done mainly a lot of hip-hop stuff.
Yeah.
So look, I don't want to credit for putting him on the dance music map, but I don't think I had seen him on any dance tracks really before. I think he had done one with another guy, but I think I was one of the first guys to work with him.
Yeah.
And I actually, because he was coming from a hip hop background, he wasn't super familiar with the style of dance music. And I feel that I helped work with him to kind of explain what makes a good dance music vocal, of like, oh, it's the repetitiveness, something that's catchy, something that's quirky like that. And so we've just really kind of developed it together. So he was experienced in recording because he'd done a lot of hip hop stuff, but the vocal production side of it, I do everything on my side. So he 100%. Records the vocal, sends it to me raw, but that's fine because I'll do all the processing on my side. And then I've got a good chain that I use on my vocals.
Yeah. And the only reason I'm going into the technical side of things is because, as you said, you know, you were saying like, reach out to artists. If you find someone on, say, like whatever socials, it could be TikTok or Instagram, you're like, fire, they got a really good voice, I could work with them. But from my experience, I've done that too. And some artists are really easy to work with, like vocalists, and some are really hard. And that's because they've got a brilliant voice, but they need so much guidance. Like, they did Kane send you, like, when he's doing his vocal takes, is he sending you just one vocal take and then you're producing it from there, or does he do layers, you know, harmonies, top an octave up, etc.? Does that make sense?
I get what you're saying. So It all comes back to, I think, your price range. If you're going to spend big money for big vocals, you're probably not going to have these issues because they're going to be super experienced people and they know what to do. So if you're paying big money for a vocal, it's probably going to come with fewer issues and fewer hassles. But if you're looking for a more budget vocal on some of these websites, then you're going to have to probably do a bit of this sort of stuff yourself, either explain to them what you want, maybe it's going to take a couple of takes, or just be very specific with your instructions to them so that they can hopefully deliver what you're after. So I would say it's half Kane's very talented and he's very professional at what he does, and half that I got lucky finding someone as talented with him, because I've employed vocal services of other people before that I just never end up using the vocal because it's not good enough. It's not up to scratch. But like any business, there's always going to be a bit of wastage. So you can't, you know, stress if you paid for a vocal and then it comes back and you're like, all right, I can't use this. It's not the end of the world. Any other business has costs and wastage as well. And I just kind of consider it that. I'm not going to go back and fight the vocalist and be like, this is shit. Do this, do that. I just kind of accept it. I'm like, all right, didn't work out, but there's going to be guys out there that can deliver with what you want. And it just comes back to doing your proper research and vetting them. And a lot of these sites have a lot of previews of their work, so you can thoroughly suss it out and kind of get an idea of if it's going to be something that suits your style or not.
Great call, man. Yeah. And like, obviously don't be just too disheartened, I guess, to anyone that's getting into vocal production, because like if one fails, just keep going. It took me quite a few goes and I still go through it. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, you have a good one, you're like, oh my God, this is so easy. Why can't I always be like this? And then other times you're like, this is so bad, you know, and not on them.
I mean, I'm just going to say it. People are fucking lazy at the end of the day. I'm happy to help people and give advice, but a lot of the time they want me to do all the work for them. They're like, oh, where do you get this vocal? Where do you do that? I'm like, just use your brain a little bit. Go onto Google, look up vocalists, start messaging publishing services that might have a playlist of top lines, but there's literally heaps of vocal services out there. You've just got to do the work going through page by page, listening to the previews and going, okay, that doesn't suit, that doesn't suit, that doesn't suit, that might suit, contact that vocalist and let's try and work it out. You've just got to put in the work there. I'm not going to link you to the best vocalist and be like, here you go, here's your magic fix. You just got to put in the work to find it. And that's all I've done. Again, I'm nothing special. I just put in the work to develop an ear for quality that I like and that I want to have in my music.
Yeah, 100%, man. It's funny. Like, so I've noticed that you're a pretty vocal dude with things that frustrate you. And can I ask you, like,
mate, I'm sure all my friends and family would agree with you.
And it's good. Like, I like the honesty, man. Like, you know, especially in these days where so many people aren't. But like, so is there anything, how do you go, let's talk about production. Is there anything in production that you find frustrating, maybe with the way that music is put out these days? Or
we'll come back to this. Can I just comment on that personality trait, because I do agree with you. And the reason I'm like that is because I don't have time to waste. The thing that I love most in this world is efficiency and being efficient. So if I'm like tiptoeing around stuff going, oh, maybe I'm either going to waste my time or waste someone else's time. So I like to be efficient. I mean what I say and I say what I mean. So when I am giving instructions or if I don't like something, I will vocalize it, because if I don't, it's just going to create problems further down the track. And again, like my discipline and my work ethic, I wasn't always this way. I might have previously, when I was younger, been the person to let something go and it's just going to result in problems down the track. So it's just, again, another personality trait or characteristic that I've developed that's going to benefit me in my work, is just meaning what I say and vocalizing if I don't like something so that we can avoid problems down the track. And just be clear with the people that you're dealing with. Say, hey, this is what I want. These are the terms, sort of thing, so that there's no issues down the track, and it'll make everything a lot easier.
Dude, that's really good advice, actually. And it's a good trait to have, particularly like, you know, say like, and in terms of bringing it back to music, when you're collaborating or something like that, if you're like, oh, you know, like say someone sends you an idea and you're like, oh, you know, it's not really for me, but you don't want to say that. And like, just be straight up, like, I guess, and just be like, look, this isn't working. Let's try again. Or, you know, because if you just, it can... Yeah, you can have problems down the track, I guess, and the networking side of things, you lose that connection, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. I was collaborating with a guy a couple of years ago and he made the comment. He said something like, oh, you're so controlling or whatever. I was like, bro, I'm like, I know how I like things done and I'm just vocalizing it. I'm not going to tiptoe around to like placate to your feelings or whatever. I'm very respectful. I'm not going to outright insult or be disrespectful, but I know how I like things and I'm going to say if something's not right or something's not up to scratch. And so, yeah, it's funny that you pick up on that because I agree with you. That's just how I am. But it's come from a place of I don't have time to waste. I need to be efficient and do what I can to make this career really kick off.
Definitely, man.
And I think, again, it just comes, I know I don't shut up about martial arts, but it all comes back to like you develop these traits as a person when you train martial arts. Because obviously, if you can defend your word and you can defend what you say, then you're going to feel more comfortable to speak your mind because you know physically you can defend what you want to say. Whereas some people might be a bit timid or shy because they're not comfortable with who they are. I'm very comfortable with who I am and I feel that I can speak my mind because of this.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, no, 100%. Like it definitely, and then it translates to, as you're saying, it translates to music and or life in general, I guess. But you know, there's so much mindset in production and so much that can get in the way of it these days, which maybe we'll discuss that. Like, you know, with social media and stuff like that, how do you approach that beast?
So did you have a question about does anything frustrate me with production or did you want to go to social media?
Let's go product. Actually, let's go back then. Let's go. Yep. On, and it's kind of the same thing. Let's go.
Production. Yeah. Put a pin in the social media and we'll go to production. So what was your question on production?
Production. I'm just like, is there anything like that maybe frustrates you? Is it say it could be with yourself? It could be like, look, I'm hitting too many roadblocks. On that note, do you hit many roadblocks as a producer?
No, I wouldn't say anything really frustrates me with the music production side. I'm writing music that I'm happy with. I'm writing music that I like to play out and it gets good reactions. So nothing really frustrates me on that front. Dealing with labels can still be tough. Like I don't get people listening to my music as quick as I'd like them to. There's some labels that I work with that hit me back straight away. And I really respect that. And that goes a long way with me because it goes back to efficiency. If you're not wasting my time, I really appreciate and value that. And I'm going to be more inclined to give you tracks down the road because you've been good to me. So I remember the labels that have been pretty fair to me and that have been respectful of my time and just put effort into my releases. But yeah, I would say frustration is maybe sending tracks to labels and they take like a month to get back to you or they just don't even get back to you, which can.
And how do you handle that? Do you like, does that get in your head much or, you know, do you just like, screw it. Like I'm pretty comfortable with what I'm doing. I'm smashing it anyway. I'm going to get there eventually. Like,
it doesn't bother me. And the younger guys ask me as well. They're like, oh, I've been rejected. It sucks. I'm at a place with my music that I know if a track's good or not. I know internally that, yes, this is a banger track. And just because five labels might say no to it doesn't mean that it's a bad track. It just might mean it's not a right fit for that label. And I truly know that. Like, I know if I've written a good track and if a label says no to me, I'm like, okay, it just wasn't the right fit for them. I'll find a label that does like it. And some of the biggest tracks that I've had, I can tell you that I've had probably about four or five labels before that label that signed it say no to it, and then that's gone to blow up and be a pretty successful track for me. So as a message to producers, again, it just comes back to the experience side. If you know what you're making is objectively and genuinely good, just because a label says no to you, don't take that too much to heart. Just keep sending it around to other labels. So to deal with the time aspect part, I might say in the email, I'll give this to you guys exclusively for a week. Could you please let me know before then? Otherwise I'll be sending it around. Something polite like that. Not like, you know, there's a way to go about it. You can be polite and say, hey, I'll give this to you exclusively for a week. Could you please let me know your thoughts on it? If they don't, then feel free to send it to other labels. And then if they come back to you later and say, hey, we love it, but you've already signed it somewhere else, you've at least got that backing to say, I gave it to you exclusively for a week. You didn't get back to me. And now I've shown someone else. Because I have heard of producers that send out too many emails, and then they get a few yeses, and then they might burn a bridge because they're going to have to tell a couple of them no. But if you're upfront at the start and say, hey, I'll give this to you for a week, could you let me know? And then they come back to you like 5 weeks later, but you've signed it somewhere else, then you've done the right thing by letting them know upfront. So I think, again, just operating honestly and transparently is probably the best policy to work with.
That's really interesting, man. I never thought to ask you that actually, as well as, is presenting two labels. So you have like a 1 week grace period where you're like, hey, this is exclusive for you guys after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
That's wicked.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I've always done 2 weeks, but it's interesting to note that 1 week because 2 weeks, like that adds up, man. Like, especially when you're trying to, you're like, all right, I'm waiting for 2 weeks for you.
Yeah.
And I wait another 2 weeks. And it turns out there's 6 weeks have passed and it's not going anywhere. And interesting to know.
I just don't have the time to waste, man. I need to get this thing going ASAP. I need to be efficient as possible. So everything's about just trying to kick this off as quick as you can, because I don't like the mentality of, oh, things will just work out, you know, just let it play out. Like, you need to force it and make it happen, because no one else is going to make it happen for you. No one else cares about your music as much as you care about your music and your career. So don't expect anyone else, whether that's a manager, booking agent, anyone, no one else is going to make this happen for you. You have to make it happen yourself. And that means getting out there and hustling and really grinding.
Yeah, great call, man. Cool. That's really good advice. I reckon I might try that my next set of demos.
and just being good to labels that are good to you. It's good to, one of my favorite things in this industry is developing relationships with good people and good labels, and then being good to them down the track, because they gave me a chance when I was smaller or when I was younger. And now I'm happy to return the favor. Now that I've got a bit of a bigger profile, I'm happy to give them tracks. You know, even if there are other bigger labels that I might be able to get on, I'm happy to be loyal and respectful to the people that gave me a shot early on. So I do remember the labels that have been good to me.
Absolutely, dude. That's awesome. And especially as also the bigger you get, you're going to be dealing with more and more egos and stuff like that. And to keep good people around you is really important, I think.
Again, though, the martial arts, it humbles the ego. Like, you're not going to turn into one of these dickhead DJs or whatever. Like, it keeps you pretty grounded.
Great call, man. Yeah, that's awesome. So if you're producing, the note is make sure you get into jiu-jitsu or some sort of,
I preach it to anyone that wants to listen, man. Like, even when I'm at my weights gym, I'm sitting in the sauna or whatever, I just tell it to anyone, whether there's parents in there and I say, hey, your kids would really benefit from this. I truly think there's something that everyone can benefit, an aspect that everyone can benefit from it in every area of their life.
Oh, bro, I totally agree. I love it. You know, like, I was doing jiu-jitsu for 6 months, then I moved, and then I did boxing up here, and I suffered a couple of concussions, so I sort of took a break, and I'm meaning to get back into it, because it really does affect everything, like the fitness side of things, and then, I don't know, it makes you a better producer, strangely enough. It makes you better.
You had a concussion, did you say?
I did, yeah. I was boxing, and I was getting into sparring, and then I had a concussion, took a break, and that was my first ever concussion in my lifetime, so that was pretty full-on, to be honest. And then... And then a month later, I was getting back into it and had another concussion, and, you know, I wasn't even getting hit hard. So I had to just take a break and sort of weigh up what I was doing, if it was worth it. It sucks because I preferred boxing. It was like, out of all the martial arts, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, I really enjoyed throwing hands.
but yeah. Well, that's what's great about the Jiu-Jitsu is you're less likely to get a concussion. You can go 110% with someone, but it's not like absorbing blows to the head that you have to really worry about that. I don't do a heap of sparring. I'm still very active with kickboxing and MMA. But there's like kickboxing classes you can do where there's no sparring. It's just pad work and that. And then the MMA classes, there's sparring, but I try and limit it because, you know, unless it's what you really want to do as a career, then yeah, it's not ideal to be taking blows to the head.
Yeah, no, 100%. And so I just, for anyone that does listen, I don't want to scare people off. Boxing is wicked and you can do it safely. It was just because I was absorbing too many punches with my face.
Yeah. So for most people, if you go to a class, there's not going to be sparring. It's just going to be pad work and fitness work, which you'll get the benefits from it that way.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Definitely.
So to back to the social media, you're going to ask me about frustrations with that?
Yeah, 100%. That was going to be my next question in this wonderful world we live in with so much social media and just it everywhere and doom scrolling, etc., how do you go with your, what's your state with social media?
Well, it's a
you're like, well,
it's a double-edged sword, isn't it, mate? I have a good friend, one of my friends, Alex, who's a mastering engineer and he's a dubstep producer as well, really great guy. I chat with him frequently and we always like fantasize about how cool it would be to be in the 1990s in LA being a music producer. So there's no social media. You can actually make money from your music. Like, we just fantasize and have this daydream about that.
Yeah.
So the pros of social media: pro, you can reach out to any label in the world on their socials. You can reach out to vocalists and you're able to connect and interact with people on that level that you weren't able to previously. Obviously the con now, it seems to be a lot less about the music and more about the content that you can post. Mm. I try not to let that affect me as much because ultimately I'm a music producer. I'm not a TikToker. So I don't let that phase me too much. and I still try to maybe do 90% music production and then maybe 10% making content. Yep. The socials, because at the end of the day, and I said this on a rant with Matt on another pod, I'm like, I'm a music producer, I'm not a TikToker. So I spend most of my time making music, but I still do understand the importance and value of making content to promote the music that you're putting out.
Mm-hmm. How do you navigate that and not get pissed off all the time? Because like, it can really get to your in your head sometimes, for me personally.
How does it get to you?
Sometimes I'll be on TikTok, for instance, and then I'll see a female or something that puts up a video. She doesn't actually do anything, it's got 15 gazillion likes. And then, you know, you're trying to put out things of value and you're seeing all these likes go to things that aren't really, they're not even really modeling. It's just like a thing. And that can, I don't know. Sometimes I have things, strategies myself that I can get over that. But in the past, that's that sort of stuff. Or it might lead you to comparison. You start thinking, well, there's another DJ getting so many likes, and you know, you might think, look, I feel like I can provide more value than them. Maybe this is your subjective opinion. Mm-hmm. So you start getting into that real negative comparison thing. Do you ever get that? Does that ever phase you, or do you have any strategies to get out of it? If so.
I think just self-belief in knowing that if you're putting in the best effort that you can and knowing that what you make is good, just it's just a numbers game. You just got to stick with it and just keep making the music and eventually things will get better. Because if you're making good music and consistently releasing it, like how can you not make it, really? A lot of people...
Really cool.
It seems that there's guys that just blow up overnight and have one hit and that become superstars overnight. But I think what's more... likely and what happens more frequently is people build up a body of work over years and years and they develop lifelong fans that follow their work. And I think that's the more frequent path that a lot of music producers follow. So yeah, there's the guys that you'll see that have the one track and blow up, but I think that's the exception. I don't think that's the majority. I think the majority are guys that have a lifelong career of music, creating a body of work that people then can follow. And then to what you're saying about scrolling and then you see things that trigger you, then just get off the scrolling. Like if it's triggering you, get off it. But also spite is the only renewable energy that you can make work. Like if something makes you angry, use that as fuel to get better in the studio. If you're pissed off with seeing everyone else have success and go, fuck these people, I'm better than them. And then get in the studio and prove them wrong. Like spite's got me some places. I could definitely internalize anger and then turn it into effort in the studio. But I think, again, just putting yourself in a good mindset, like if you're training regularly and eating well, I don't think you're going to be like getting upset over things you see on socials. I think you're going to be in a pretty good mindset that you can then go into the studio with is probably a good answer.
Great call, man. 100%.
Like, I mean, I'm not immune to it. I definitely scroll and I go, oh, this guy, it's shit. I'm way better than him. I should be there. But like, what am I going to do about it? Leave a negative comment and then look like a loser? Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to internalize it, go into the studio and be better about it.
That's wicked.
He's probably the best way to handle it.
Yeah, that's wicked, brother. No, like you got your head real screwed on by the sounds of it. Like,
but also, I can say this because I know people are listening to my music. If I was on Spotify and I didn't have a decent amount of monthly listeners, then I might be a bit more angry. But yeah. As it stands, I've got a good amount of monthly listeners on Spotify, and that's what I care about. I want people listening to my music. So now that I know that that's happening and I know people are listening to it, I'm not as fussed about the social media content. I make the content to help promote my release, but I'm not overly worried, because what's the alternative? You're a DJ that makes heaps of content on socials, and then you go on their Spotify and they have like 1,000 monthly listeners, and like, okay, you're not a real musician then. You're a TikToker. So
yeah, 100%. Well, it comes back down to like, what are you doing it for? Are you a musician? Like, do you want to do it because you're a musician and you want to be a music producer, or you just want like people to admire you? And you know, again, it's like that ego side.
Exactly. And I'm not that fussed about that. I don't want people to admire me. I want people to like my music, and then if they like me afterwards, cool. That's fine. And that's actually how I started off Needs No Sleep, is we started it not revealing who I was, because I had just done the EDM project. I didn't want people to be like, oh, that's that Apocalypto guy. Now he's doing this. What's going on? So we had like purposely covered my face in all the first press picks and didn't reveal who I was until a couple of years down the track, because I wanted people to fall in love with the music first, like the music, and then they can like me as a person afterwards. But I'm not looking for people to worship me as a DJ. I just want people to like my music, and I want DJs to play my music as well.
100%, man. And whereabouts are you playing like these days in terms of your DJing? Because DJing is obviously really important. You can't just be like a music producer all the time. You have to have some elements of playing the records you're making, right?
Yeah, so I play Porn & Co. frequently. They are very kind enough to book me, which I appreciate. I let them know I'm very grateful for it, because they've got a great sound system and they've got a great crowd. And there's been plenty of times where I'm working on a track and I'll take it to Porn & Co. and either the mixing aspect, I need to tweak something because of how it sounded on the sound system, or even maybe arrangement wise, I've needed to tweak something because of how it worked in the club. So
sorry to interrupt you, but where is Porn & Co? Is that
on Chapel Street in Melbourne?
Yeah.
So that's probably my most regular club, and I can always count on the crowd there to be awesome. So shout out to Porn & Co. And then I've also got booking agents called Dangerous Goods, and these guys run a lot of their own parties as well. So that's a real benefit. Is, you know, having booking agents that can put you on all of their shows, which is very beneficial. And then just a few other places around town.
That's wicked, dude. And would you, for anyone writing records and stuff, do you feel like a booking agent is necessary? It's like you need something to work up to. How important is it?
Again, this all goes back to no one's going to care about your career as much as you do. So if you're starting off new, you might benefit from going out to club nights, meeting the promoters there, getting involved in the scene. Because I had done that so much already when I was younger, I don't feel the need to do it as much. Now, I still like to pop in tonight, say hi to guys that I've known for years and everything. But I spent a lot of time doing that when I was younger, making those relationships. But if you're a new person starting out, go out to the local night, meet the promoter there. Obviously, don't get hammered off your face until 5 a.m. and then you can't do anything for the rest of the weekend, but you can still pop out, support the scene, meet the promoters is definitely beneficial. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't, none of these solutions are like the be all end all that's going to make your career. Nothing's just going to, you can't be like, oh, if I get a booking agent, then I'm going to blow up. You've just got to just accept that it's a long journey and just put in the work, hoping that you start to get smaller, bigger, like get some wins along the way.
100%, man. It's funny you say that, because a lot of the artists that like have blown up have had just, you look at their beat. I always look at the Beatport catalog, see how long they've actually been writing records for. You know, you look at guys like Camel Fat that have just been doing it for so long, and you're it gives me a sense of like, it's all good. Like, just keep sticking at it.
Yeah.
Keep doing your thing, developing your sound. Be a good person while you do it, etc. And then, you know, you will be rewarded in the end.
Definitely. And that goes back to what I was saying about, for the majority of music producers, it's a body of work, not an overnight success. So you mentioned Camel Fat. I'd mention someone like Martin Eichen, who's been releasing music for a long, long time. And now he's, you know, massive, but he's been doing it for a while. And when he played in Melbourne at the end of last year, and I was chatting with him, and he said this is like his third or so project. He had many projects before this.
Wow.
This is the one that's really taken off. So I think for the majority of people, it's going to be a long grind. And in saying that, maybe just don't let your music career dictate all of your emotions. Have a group of friends, have some other hobbies outside of it, so that your emotions aren't based solely on your music career, because there's many ups and there's many downs. There's many low points. There's many times you're like, oh, this sucks. I feel like I'm not going anywhere. So try and not have it dictate all of your emotions is what I would say.
Definitely. Yeah. Like don't identify with it, because you can, again, with how present social media is these days, you can literally become your act, and you're like, you know, if you're not getting signed to a certain label, or if you have a bit of a dry spell, you're like, oh my God, like I could quite easily go into a real negative self-talk sort of thing. That's a good call.
Yeah. And I think just trying to make some friends in the scene as well always makes the journey a bit more fun, because one, you can share those low points with the guys that you're with. You can help them out and they can help you. You know, we've kind of been chatting with some other Aussie producers, you and me, and it's always nice to like share our experiences and go, oh, this is funny, that sucked, or this is really good, and share a bit of advice. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I've been trying to do as well is I've created a Discord community where I'm helping upcoming producers. So I get them to post their tracks in the Discord. I'll listen to them. I'll leave some feedback and then maybe suggest a label that might be suited for this track as well. And I do that purely because I wish there was someone like that helping me when I was younger. I know how tough it can be and I want to give back to the guys coming up because I've got a bit of, it doesn't take much time for me to jump on my computer 10 minutes before I do a studio session or something, listen to the demos and then leave some comments and maybe help them out. I've helped maybe like 15 guys sign tracks in that Discord group, which I feel really happy with. I'm glad that I was able to help them and connect them with labels that like their music. So I'm doing that purely because I wish someone did that for me when I was a bit younger.
That's wicked, dude. Cause you could, you know, you can quite easily be like, oh, look, I'm trying so hard like to make my career successful and kind of look at it, and I think you've mentioned it before, kind of like a scarcity mentality. Like, I don't want to give away my secrets. I'm working my butt off. But really it's about like everyone should be helping each other reach success, right?
Yeah, definitely. You're right. I've used that phrase, abundance mindset and scarcity mindset. And it all just comes back to your self-belief in what you're doing. So me helping a friend sign a track doesn't negatively impact me. He's not taking my spot on that label. Like, I know that I write good music, so I'm not worried to help a friend sign a track. Like, I think that's crazy if you could help someone sign a track and then you don't do it. And I know there's a lot of guys in this industry that do that, but I think that's crazy if you're not going to help someone sign it. So I really try to go out of my way to help people to just be a good force in the industry. I really do genuinely just try and do that.
100%, man. That's really awesome. And I've seen that, especially with like, you know, you're doing your masterclasses and obviously, as you said, your Discord that you've got, and starting like the group chats as well, like, you know, building like a network. And me personally, I started like that. And as life goes on, you know, as you've been in the scene for a while, life can get in the way and you realize that you lose some of those connections. So it's really important to keep musical connections going, be it like guys that are just starting out and getting into it. And, you know, you can learn from everyone, right? That's that white belt mentality.
Yeah. And it's like, don't you want to have some friends to go along the journey with? You don't want to get to the top and then you're by yourself and you're like, oh, well, this sucks. I'm here by myself. Don't you want to bring up some guys with you that you can all make some noise? Like, it'd be awesome if you, me, Fab, Mason, Tom, we're all up there and then we can run parties together or whatever. Like the possibilities are endless when you've got some friends along the way with you. And you just don't want to be known as that guy who's a dick. Like, I'm not going to name names now, but you and me both know there's plenty of DJs that have a reputation for being a wanker or just being a knob. Like, someone, you'll be in a green room and someone goes, oh, I saw this person, and someone else will tell a story and go, oh, he was a wanker, he tried to do this, do that when he was here. And you just don't want that reputation. Just be a good person and try and help out where you can, because being in clubs like for the past 10 years, you hear so many stories of DJs just being wankers, and it's like, I don't know what gets to their head. It's like, bro, you just press play. It's not that crazy. Relax.
100%. It's that, just that, I guess, having a sense of humility when you go about things, like, I'm just, I don't know, very.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, I think I'm amazing what I do, but I'm not going to be a dick and put other people down or just be a dick to be around. You just, there's a fine line between having confidence and self-belief and then just being an egomaniac and being a knob.
Yeah. 100%. Which with anything, I think in anything creative, obviously we're talking about dance music or like it could be film or anything, like as more of your eyes are getting on you, egos just come in. Like, I've been in a lot of places, like, you know, I was in ADE in Amsterdam, and like, you can just sense the people that are really like up themselves a bit, you know, compared to others that are just like, you know, just want to have a chat, friend, we're all in this together, right? Like, and there's so much ego in it.
And how nice and how refreshing is it when you meet someone who's got a big name and they're actually a good person? Like, it's genuinely surprising and you're like, wow, that guy's huge, but he's a friendly guy to be around. Like, it's nice. It's
and and you like their music even more. You're like, man, this guy's even killer. So you're more of a fan. So 100%, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I guess just going back to philosophically about this whole journey is I can't see myself doing anything else. I genuinely like writing music, and the music that I write and release is the thing that I'm most proud of in my life. Like, out of anything in my life, the music that I have released is truly what makes me the happiest and what makes me the most proud. So yes, there's a whole lot of negative things that come with this. Of it's a long journey and you don't get a lot of recognition for a long time, but I can't see myself doing anything else. And this is truly what I want to make happen. And so these are the sacrifices that I'm willing to take to make this career work. And it might not be for everyone. You might realize that, no, I'm not willing to make those sacrifices of completely pulling back from social life, spending weekends, writing music. Like that might not be what you want to do, but for me it is. And this is what I want to make work.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, definitely. I agree. You know, like, I don't know about you. One of my favorite moments is like, for me, is like starting a day. I like to write in the morning, to be honest. I'm not like a night owl or anything, but I like having my logic session blank. For me, I love to have a coffee there and just like, you know, that's just like such a good start to my day, is having the ability just to jump straight into a session and just lose yourself in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a morning person for writing music as well, but there's two things that give me the greatest sense of joy in life currently. Like I've experienced a lot of things, and the two that consistently give me positive emotions is winning jiu-jitsu competitions and then playing killer gigs. Those two are equal in how happy they make me. I have the biggest smile on my face. I'm really, really happy afterwards. Now the jiu-jitsu one is probably even harder to make money or make a career from. And you also have a finite amount of time before your body sort of is over the hill. So I enjoy doing that from a hobby and a recreational point of view, but the music is something that seems to be more sustainable, that I can keep playing gigs as I get older. I can keep writing music. And then the music is also there forever. There's something really, really cool about creating art that is going to outlive you. Like yeah. I love fitness and I love being in great shape, but I have to maintain this constantly. And there's going to be a point that it starts to decline. But with music, if you create a great piece of art, that's going to be around forever. And I think that's really powerful.
Oh, absolutely, dude. It's funny, like, cause you're mentioning, you know, jiu-jitsu and all this MMA talk as well with the production. Cause they go back there. They're so yin and yang. Like they're so different. Like when I find, I don't know about you, but when I get sick of one, like, you know, I hit a roadblock or a writer's block or something, I can always go to like, I'll just go do a workout. And I tend to like, you know, I'm either listening to music while I'm out there doing a session or something like that. And then like lots of ideas pop in my head or lyrics pop in. So I guess, I don't know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, man. They definitely relate with each other. The funny thing is that martial arts, with things like, you know, jiu-jitsu comps or fighting, there's a definitive winner because of the actions taken. So like if you lose, it's probably because you made a mistake. But with music, it can be a lot more subjective, so that just because something rises to the top doesn't mean that it's like objectively the best. Whereas with like martial arts, if you keep winning, it's because you're better, sort of thing.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
that aspect as well that like is interesting. I think about that sometimes. I'd imagine if music was like more like a martial art, where if it was objectively better, then you're going to get there quicker.
Mm.
But yeah, they're my two favorite things in life. And I guess, as you put it, yin and yang is a good way to phrase it, of they complement each other, but they're also so very different.
Yeah.
And yeah, the people I relate to most in life are the ones that are into fitness and looking after themselves and working hard, because I think it's just going to give you a better longevity in anything. Like there are guys that, you know, might party heaps and still are putting out good music, but it's going to catch up with them eventually. You can't keep doing that forever without it catching up. So I think if you want longevity in music or anything really, you've got to find a way that you can do it that's sustainable. And for me, that's getting lots of sleep. It, as contrary to what my artist name is, needs no sleep.
Yeah, that's classic. Thing,
I came up with that name like back when when I was younger than that, and now I'll be like, oh, I've got to go to bed, and they're like, oh, I thought you don't need no sleep. And I'm like, it's just a
that's
play
funny
on words,
as
mate. It's more just imagine. A funny play on words, but yeah, I need plenty of sleep, I need to eat right, and not much alcohol is how I function best to get to be productive and get things done.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. It's a cool name, to be honest, like, but it's just
yeah
funny.
it's catchy something that rolls off the tongue. And the syncopation of it is nice. Needs no sleep, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Because my name, I've got two like first names, or Mitch Thomas. So it's like, it's not really a unique artist name. So like,
oh yeah. See,
so like guys like that do their name. If they've got a super unique name, okay, it can work. But if you look up that name, it's going to come up with a million different things. So you want to also think about an artist name that would be easy for people to search. So needs no sleep, when I came up with that, there was nothing even close to it.
Yeah, wicked. Now I didn't actually even think about that. That's a great call of like selecting, you know, you and me both have had different projects, and like trying to come up with a name that, yeah, as you said, is easy to say, it represents you and what you want to be about, you know, it kind of fits. Like it's got a, I always, me personally, I always envision it like, all right, how would it sound when they're saying it on like BBC Radio 1 or something like that?
That's a good idea. That's a good way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like flash 89, you know, like
more important. Yeah. That's good.
He's no more sleep. Importantly, like just banger.
That's pretty cool. But more importantly, just that it's easy to search and it's not going to get confused with anything else. Because if it's a common phrase, then how are people going to find your music or whatever? So do the research before you come up with a name, because you don't want to be like five tracks in and be like, oh, this is a shit name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like with Apocalypto, I used to get that with the movie. And I actually didn't even know there was a movie. I swear I just came up with that name somehow. Mm. I was like thinking of names and I didn't even know there was a movie of the same title. So that came afterwards. But with Needs No Sleep, I looked that up thoroughly beforehand, made sure there was nothing else similar to it, and there wasn't.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. It's funny, like there's been a lot of talented act over the years, whatever genre. There's like some names that are like sound so stupid, but like once you've built a brand on it and stuff like that, you can pretty much have any name. But
yeah, I think about that as well. When I was thinking about it, it's like I was thinking of a guy like Afrojack. Like it's not that unique of a name. It's just Afrojack. But because he had created a sound for his music and a unique identity with his sound, that gives meaning to the name. So it's the music that's going to give meaning to your name. Just pick a name that's not going to be confused with anything else that's a common phrase or anything. But it's definitely the music and the brand that you create. It will give meaning to that name.
Great call, man. Yeah, definitely. Like, it's funny that, because I reckon if, say, like Afrojack didn't exist and then someone who was starting in production was like, yo, I'm trying to come up with names. What do you think? They're looking at street signs and stuff. You know, he's just trying
Hey,
yeah. So, and then Afrojack, you're like, it doesn't sound that impressive, but because he's done so much stuff with it.
So for the new guys, if you're thinking of a name, you're probably not going to come up with a name that you go, wow, this is like headline stuff. You're going to have to work and create that feeling that comes from the name. Just choose a name that's not going to be confused with anything else or get mistaken by a common phrase is the advice.
Yeah, definitely, man. Like, I remember, like, I mean, as long as you like it, right? And you can envision everything we've just sort of discussed. Cause I remember like one chick was talking to me at the end of a night, she was absolutely wasted. And she's like, Flash 89, that is the most terrible name ever I've heard. Like, you've got to change it right now. And in my head, I was like, mate, I've been writing records for like however long, blah, blah, blah. And it just came back to like, I know what I see in my head and it works for me. I'm going to stick with it. You know what I mean? Like just knowing.
So I would like to go back to a topic that we were talking about before, about things that we have issues with or things that annoy us, because you've been producing for a long time as well. And you've been involved in the music scene as well. What are some things that you've seen evolve for the better? And then also some things that have devolved into negative consequences. So for me, I would say things like music streaming platforms are cool because anyone can now listen to your music. Maybe back in the day, for someone to listen to your music, they had to really be invested in the band to commit $20 to a CD or something. Now, and then before streaming, it was buying tracks. Even then, they still had to commit like $1.69 or $2 to support your music. Now anyone can just hit play on your profile and get introduced to your music. And I think that's really cool that you can be, that your music can reach so many more people. Obviously the downside of it is there's no money in it. Like there's zero money in streaming. Even the biggest artists in the world are not making a sustainable living from their music. That comes all from all the touring that they do. But how do you get to touring? You've got to release music that people care about. So those are what I see with streaming, the positive and the negative. What are some other things that you've seen along the way over the last couple of years?
For me, I think things have changed. Like things are ever changing so often. Like I find that the dance scene changes every maybe 5 years, maybe like maybe three within that. Like it cycles through. Different genres come in. Tech house is really big right now. That's changed. That'll eventually change, but not going on that. Things that changed me, like I reckon when I started, if you wrote like a good record or got signed to a really good label, you'd be like on your way.
Yeah. You know?
Whereas now it's like there's just so many people writing records and so many people writing good records too, that's one of the things that's quite challenging. I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. It's just I've noticed that like you might get played by a big act, a big artist, and all of a sudden people are like, who's this? I want to see this person. Now no one really cares. And it's more about like and this comes to the negative side of things where it seems to be more about your brand on social media that can really hurt you. And that can be I found that a real challenge at times to like, how do I find my voice? I'm not a big guy that wants to go on social media. Naturally, I'd rather just like live my life and be with the people I care about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real challenge, but it's a necessity and you have to be, and it's like, I've realized that you've got to use it rather than it using you. Yep. And so for me personally, I've turned my mentality around with it of giving value in one way or another. So that might be teaching others what I already know, like teaching, mentoring, as you've discussed with yourself as well. Mentoring, obviously you're writing records and you're giving, that is a value to the world because you're being creative and you're trying to show people like, look, I've made this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. So I guess like the negative would be like, for me is social media can be a real challenge to navigate, a real sea to navigate, an ocean or a storm, but switching it around and just making sure you're providing value and staying true to yourself in that time without sounding cliche can really help. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Back in the day, you might be able to sign a track or sign to a label and then that would make your career and even guarantee your trajectory from there. That seems yeah. to be less frequent now. I definitely yeah. agree with that. And the market's a lot more saturated. There's obviously a lot more producers, a lot more people making music. So it is harder to stand out. And you're right. It does come back to you creating a brand that people care about. And I agree. I'd rather be someone that just writes music, but this is the cards we've been dealt. We have to engage with the social media aspect of it. So yep. you just yep. make the most of it and do stuff that doesn't compromise your integrity or your own authenticity at the same time as providing value. So you'll never see me doing some lame TikTok dance, like just to try and farm views or something. Create content that provides value. So whether that's a how I made this track and it's a little quick reel showing the insides of the track, whether it's speaking to the camera, giving some advice, which I've seen you've been doing and I've done one as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just looking at what the landscape is and then trying to make some positive content for it.
Yeah. Definitely. And I like, as I said, like, you know, using it rather than it using you, talking to myself with a selfie doesn't come naturally, but it also can be useful because it's making me better at talking. Mm-hmm. And like for me personally, I'm starting to find a bit of a voice, like, and don't be afraid of like, in the past I've cared maybe too much, maybe what my appearance might be, it might affect my brand, but now I'm like, screw it. Like I'm just trying to be myself and I'm trying to find my voice through doing all these posts. There's some things that I'm like, I look back, I'm like, oh, maybe that was a bit cringy, but now I know I won't do that again. That's not how I want to present myself. And just being active and just being more genuine about it rather than being like ego driven, like I'm trying to look cool or I'm, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
No, I feel the same way as well. Used to worry about, how do I look or whatever, but it's just like, yeah, just be true to yourself. Don't try to be cool. Anyone that tries to be cool, it's obvious that they're trying to be cool. Just be authentic and real and be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm making. And, you know, people will probably resonate with that more than people are pretty good at sensing when someone's inauthentic.
Absolutely, man. And I can only talk from my experience. Like I can see it. And I also see it when people are being authentic. And even if they look kind of silly, because I know they're being authentic, I'm like, fuck it. Good on you, man. And I want to follow them more, you know?
Yeah.
At least I find anyway.
Yeah. I still won't post like silly stuff. Like I'm not trying to look like a clown, but yeah, I'm a bit more comfortable speaking to the camera and saying some things.
Oh yeah. 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 I don't mean like being silly with it, but like, you know, I don't know, maybe they're talking and they fuck up a word or something, you know, I'm not gonna be like, oh my God, he can't speak on camera. Like, you know?
Yeah. The complete opposite scale though, where people fuck up on purpose to try and make it too authentic. And it's like,
oh, yeah, come on, bro.
I've seen that stuff as well.
Yeah. Well, then I guess it's being authentic. I don't know.
So this is what is going on in my head. This is how I see my journey as well, is with music. I still think the way that you can make money from it is from touring, from having your own shows, that sort of thing. But obviously to get there, you've got to create a brand and create music that people care about.
Yep.
Is that what you see as well? Is the end goal of making money from this industry is through gigs and through shows?
Yes. Yes and no. Like I've in the recent months, and with some help with some mentoring as well from a mentor of mine who was actually more of a financial guy, but that was literally just about getting my finances in order. But then that sort of went into business, and my business is my music, you know?
Yeah.
And I've found in the past, like trying to write things you might not get much out of it sometimes. Like it's not a lot of reward in terms of money and stuff. And obviously you don't do it for money, but you've got to do it in a way where you're like, all right, I'm actually, how do I say it? I've started to rejig rather than just about gigs and stuff like that. I've looked at, well, I've got these skills I can start teaching and you know, I'm providing value to people. I'm getting value because I'm getting some sort of income from it as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like rejigging the way you do things, working smarter rather than harder. Instead of grinding and just writing records nonstop, which is a really important thing to do, is go, well, I've also got these skills I could be teaching people. Or if I'm giving out free content, rather than giving out free content, maybe I could do like a little subscription service, like I said, in the Patreon, like, you know, that's like $5 and people get all these records of mine. And I've just found that quite useful. And it's just rejigging things a little bit.
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. And that's why I started the website and then started these masterclass videos. And now I'm even bringing out a sample pack because, again, we've got these set of skills that we've developed and perfected over the last decade or so. So it is nice that there are avenues to express it. So with this sample pack, I've put a lot of effort into this sample pack coming out. Like sometimes you will buy a sample pack and it's just garbage and you're like, oh, this is crap. And I never want anyone to have that experience with things that I put out. I want it to be a fair exchange of value. If you're giving me your hard-earned money for it, I want you to genuinely benefit and receive it positively. So for this sample pack, I put a lot of effort into crafting these sounds and making sure that people are going to get value from it. And I think that's honest money feels good as well. If you're giving out a good service or a good product to people and you can make money from it, then that feels nice, you know? So while the music doesn't make money at the moment, if anything, I spend more money on promoting my music than I make from it.
Mm.
But yeah, I've started these other avenues as well, but I still would like to play a lot of shows. I love DJing. I love playing good sets. So for me personally, I would like to be a lot more frequent with touring and everything.
Yeah, definitely. I guess just about having a bit of a balancing act. I noticed as time went on, I was getting further and further away from DJing because I probably say I'm more of a music producer than a DJ, even though I started as a DJ.
But if you were given the chance to play every second night for a good price, you would do it, wouldn't you?
100%.
Yeah, so it's not that you're more of a music producer. It's just the opportunities haven't been there. And that's the same with me. I would play every night if I was given the opportunities. It's just, you know, not as frequent as you would like. So don't think that you're not a DJ because I know you are. It's just the opportunities aren't exactly there for us.
Thanks, man. That's a great call. I didn't think of it like that. So that's why it's important to have like other producers to talk to because it's like you're saying and then you have a different perspective. You're like, wait a minute, that's a good point. Like, you
know? Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time. This has been awesome. Like I've actually loved discussing these topics with you. Like you really switched on, man. And I guess I wanted to round it out unless you can say, if you have anything else to say, let me know after. Mm-hmm. But if you could go back and meet your younger self when you were just starting out, I'd love to know what would be the advice that you would have given younger Mitch or Apocalypto or wherever you started, even before you had the name of Apocalypto, you know, very day dot.
I hear this one on other podcasts all the time and I think about this one as well.
Mm.
I don't think you can live in hindsight. I don't think you can live in regret going, I wish I did that. I wish I did that. Of course, there's plenty of things I'd change about my life. I'd change probably everything if I could be given the chance. It's just about learning lessons along the way, taking the valuable information from mistakes that you made and making sure you don't make that mistake in the future and just trying to make positive choices moving forward. You can tell someone not to touch that hot stove 100 times, they're still going to touch the hot stove and burn themselves. They've got to learn it for themselves. So I don't want to like dwell or even think about it. I'm happy with where I'm going now. I'm working hard. I know I'm doing the right things that I can do to try and make this music career happen. So tell my younger self, it's like, just work hard. Just try hard. Just try. That's at the end of the day, that's all you can ask from anyone is just put the effort in and to try. And if you come up short, okay, but at least you tried because what's the alternative? Not trying at all. And that sounds absolutely miserable. So I think that's what I would tell my younger self.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, no, 100%, man. Was there anything else you wanted to chat about or anything like that?
Will you have me back for a part two? Because I've enjoyed this. This is great.
Bro, 100%, man. This is awesome. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that goes without question. And I think like things will pass and time will pass since this conversation, I think it'll be interesting to see kind of like what has changed and where our mental states are at, you know, like in that sense. I think that'll be really cool.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed this chat, man. This is a tight 90 minutes. So yeah, I reckon we leave it here for people, but I would definitely like to come back on and chat with you, you know, whenever you've got time for me next. It's always nice chatting with like-minded people and yeah, we'll see what's progressed. I'll stick to this one track a month. So I'll have a lot more music out by then.
Yep.
Yeah. No, and yeah, as you said, Kryptonite just came out yesterday when we're recording this, and it's done like 5K plays overnight, which is really good. I'm really happy.
Wicked, dude. 100%, man. And yeah, where can people actually hit you up?
So Needs No Sleep on Instagram. I check every message for now. My inbox isn't crazy flooded that I can't check them. So if you send me a message, I will get back to you. Mm-hmm. My Discord channel is in my bio link on Instagram. And then all my music is on all the main platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Beatport. It's all up there. But Instagram's probably my most active app if anyone wants to get in contact with me and chat. And I do genuinely love chatting with people when I have the time for it. So if you'd like to chat music or anything. And then my website, needsnosleep.com, is where I have my masterclass videos breaking down how I've made my most well-known tracks. I've got the sample pack, which will be dropping July 31st. And then I also do mixing and mastering for people if they want to help get their tracks sound better. A lot of people send me tracks in the in Messenger, and I'll go, this is a really, really cool idea. You just need some help bringing out the best elements of it and helping it shine. And I've learned from the best in the industry, Alex. He's taught me a lot about mixing and mastering, and so now I'm very competent with my stuff. And the proof is just listen to my music and you'll pretty much agree that it sounds, you know, nice and tight, punchy and loud. And I like helping people bring out the best in their tracks as well. And a label might be more inclined to sign it because you're showing them the best possible version of this track, not something that sounds okay. You're showing them the best possible version. So reach out to me on any of those places and I'd be happy to chat anything.
It's something we'll have to definitely, I reckon next time we catch up, maybe we can talk about the more of a tech talk on mixing, actually. That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But that's awesome. So anyway, man, thank Mitch, Needs No Sleep. Thank you for coming on the Music Maker Podcast. That is awesome. It's been a pleasure having you. And yeah, we'll leave it at that. We'll see you next time, eh?
Thank you very much, Paul, for having me. Have a good one, mate. See everyone for listening. Cheers.